Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
Crawl out through the fallout, baby, when they drop that bomb. Crawl out through the fallout with the greatest of aplomb. When your white count's getting higher, hurry, don't delay. I'll hold you close and kiss those radiation burns away.
So, it's a strange place to begin, isn't it? I'm actually fairly certain that that song is a 1960 novelty tune. I mean, it sounds like maybe something they would have made for the series Fallout, which we're going to be talking about today. It's a series on Prime Video. But I'm pretty sure that's actually a real song. I don't remember it, and it seems odd because in 1960 people had legitimate reasons to be worried about Fallout. I mean, not that they don't now, but I mean, nuclear anxiety was just kind of a constant at the time that was released. Anyway, we'll talk about the music in this series at some point as well, but it's time to get going with the news. Today we are going to talk about Fallout, and we are going to talk about Conan O'Brien Must Go, a travel series starring, you guess who, Conan O'Brien. I think the Papoulian through line for this that I decided this morning is if you watched quite a bit of Fallout, but not the relevant scene, and you watched quite a bit of the Conan O'Brien Must Go series, and I asked you which show you think contained the line, ass jerky don't make itself, I think you'd be 50-50 on it. You know, I mean, it really could be said. In either one of those contexts. And we might tell you which one it is set in. But when I say we, I mean our panel today. Rich Holland is a principal at CoLab, founder of Free Center, and commissioner on cultural affairs for the city of Hartford. Sean Murray is a stand-up comedian, writer, and the host of the Nobody Asked Sean, S-H-A-W-N, podcast. Carolyn Payne is an actress, comedian, and dancer, and many other things besides, and founder, director, and choreographer of Kinetic Dance. I do want to say that for this segment of The Nose, all three of our panelists agreed to have their noses removed, and there's just a hole where they used to be, which is kind of an odd thing, considering that the show is called The Nose. So we're going to talk about Fallout. It is a TV series. The first season is now airing. It started on April 10th. There is now going to be a second series. I don't think they've started photography yet on it. Let's just begin, before we get the panel's thoughts about this, with a little scene. This is the star of, you'll hear the star of Fallout, Ella Purnell, or maybe one of the two stars. Ella Purnell as Lucy McClane, Dale Dickey as Ma June, and Edith Jason as Barb. Here we go, A1 Cat.
I'm actually looking for one criminal in particular.
Holy sh**. You're an actual vault dweller.
I am.
I thought all you starting dipshits were dead. Barb, get in here. You gotta see this.
Ma'am, the raider I'm looking for is about 5'9".
Barb!
A woman in her 50s, I think.
Barb!
Goes by the name of
Barb,
Moldaver.
Get in here. Get back to your f***ing room, Barb.
I take it you know who she is?
Everyone knows who Moldaver is. Get out of here, Vault Dweller.
Ma'am, this Moldaver broke into my vault, took my dad, and killed...
And I'm telling you, you're gonna go through a whole lot worse if you stay around here. Trust me. I can tell by looking at you. Clean hair, nice teeth. All 10 fingers. Must be nice.
All 10 fingers for now. So I should also quickly say that Fallout begins kind of, it seems to me, circa, sometime in the ill-advised cheeriness of the Eisenhower era. This is not a spoiler. It happens in the first few minutes. There is, in fact, a set of nuclear detonations. People are driven into their fallout shelters, their so-called vaults. And then it picks up many, many decades later when multiple generations have grown up inside these vaults. And it turns out there are other people who've been growing up on the wasteland above the vaults. So let's get going with our conversation. And Carolyn Payne, I'm going to have you kick things off. Just give us your overall thoughts about this series.
So I would have never watched this show in a million years. And that's what I love about doing The Nose. It pushes me outside my comfort zone. I never had heard of the video game. This just would have gone completely under my radar. And I'm glad that I watched it and am watching it. I still have some episodes to go, but it really pleasantly surprised me. I'm not a sci-fi fan, though I do love like Star Wars will always hold a special place in my heart. This has that, it hits the same kind of notes that Star Wars does in creating this world and these characters and the monsters and robots and all of that. But it has, it really does a good job with the performances. And I love the dark sense of humor with it and the music. I'm really shocked that I am so invested in this and think that it's great.
So I'm being informed by our producer that it's not set in the cheery optimism of the Eisenhower era, but it's an alternative history of Earth where advances in nuclear technology after World War II led to the emergence of a retro-futuristic society and a subsequent resource war. I don't know what that means, and it's probably from the video game. Yeah, Carolyn, I'll just stay with you for a second on this. I sort of get the analogy to Star Wars. If Star Wars had a lot more blood and human entrails.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously.
But I think the other thing that it's got, that it's a little bit Star Wars-y, but sharper, is a really good sense of humor. This, mm-hmm. you know, I'm very critical of everything has to be in a kind of a serial comic mode these days, but this one really worked for me. The serious stakes occasionally seem somewhat serious, and I don't know, I just think it's really funny.
Yeah, I think that having, sometimes action films and shows, they don't, they're comedy with it. The timing is off, or they're just kind of these like cliche lines that are thrown in there. But this really, at the heart of it, is a well written comedy in a lot of ways. I would argue that it made me laugh in when other shows haven't, like at all in this genre. And I think that it saves it from being just like gory and, you know, some sort of geeky sci-fi video game lover. I think it really brought it into a realm where you could enjoy it with no prior knowledge of this, whatever Jonathan described, this postmodern world.
Whatever it was. Without, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I have no familiarity with the video game it's based on, which has multiple iterations. And I was having a lot of fun. But your mileage may vary. Let's hear from the rest of the panel. How about you, Rich? I feel like you are not as in love with this thing as maybe Carolyn and I might be.
Well, see, here's the thing. It started off for me for the first 2.5 hours of watching this.
Which is one total episode?
It was like 1.5 episodes, right? It was sort of like my guarantee into heaven, right? To be able to stick with this thing. It was sort of like, to me, a real sort of cliche combination of Mad Max, Westworld, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and even to a little bit, The Simpsons movie, how, you know, underneath that giant dome and the complexity of living in a bubble. You know, it had all of these predictable, anticipated, qualities about it, even the performances, the writing, the direction, everything kind of fell into this kind of air of familiarity until folks got further and further out of their bubbles and then back into their bubbles and out of the bubbles and back into the bubbles, where the characters started evolving and becoming more complex. So if folks could hang in with the first 2.5 hours of feeling like you've seen this before, it suddenly becomes a thing that you haven't seen before. And that is where it got interesting for me. and I started actually really liking this, and I'm going to see it all the way through, and we'll most likely see the next season. Now, my question becomes, you know, my cliffhanger is, will this become exhausting after a while? You know, will it become like, okay, yeah, now I know that unpredictability is what we're doing here, so now I'm bored again.
Yeah, that could happen. I'm in the same place. I really do plan. The episodes are long. That's the joke that Sean just made. But they don't feel that long to me. And I am planning to finish this. And I don't always finish everything that we watch on the nose. But so, Sean, you are the person who I think has a relationship with the video game on which this is based. And I don't know how that may or may not color your feelings about it right now. But tell us what you are feeling.
Well, the first thing I felt was I've been sitting here trying to figure out which figure to invoke who's rolling over in their grave for you guys. Keep frequently comparing this to Star Wars, but most of the key figures who were involved in the creation of Star Wars are still alive.
Right.
George Lucas is rolling over, I guess, in his mansion.
Yeah.
I don't see it as much with the Star Wars connection, but I do like it. I wish it kind of was just a straight up comedy. I feel like most of the things that... when they try to make it like dramatic, like it's like, I don't actually care if Lucy, I like Kyle MacLachlan. So like, I want her to find her father because that's who plays her father. But I don't care about her. Like, I don't care. Like, I just, but I think, so as someone who's played the video game, I think they do a not bad job of like, you know, including a lot of the stuff that you experience in the video game. But in the video game, you don't really think about how silly most of it is because you don't really care. Like, you kind of just experience it and you want to just do as much as possible. And I feel like because a lot of it is kind of goofy and ridiculous, I feel like if it was just a straight comedy, I probably would enjoy it a little bit more. But also, I understand that, you know, the amount of special effects and production design that has to go into something like this, they wouldn't spend on just a straight up comedy. But, I did want to ask you, Colin, as someone who lived through the Eisenhower era, like how much you think it matched up in terms of...
You know, people were asking me the same thing last week about Manhunt, you know, because I lived through the Civil War too, obviously. But I have a question for you after this. What I loved about it was that I love the music of this. If we don't talk about it now, I'll talk about it during the endorsements. But I love the music, a lot of which is sort of, you know, found music that evokes a particular kind of cheeriness. And I, you know, it's not, first of all, I do recognize all that stuff. And we should say the people who live in the vaults, they live in this kind of 1950s kind of Wes Anderson, Asteroid City, Bakelite kind of aesthetic that is very funny. And they have all these sort of, you know, morale posters up, you know, keep your thumbs up and all this kind of stuff. I think it's, I like that. And I like the fact that it is used partially ironically, but partially it is embraced genuinely. But Sean, a name that nobody has said so far, but that you and I probably have things to say about, is Walton Goggins. There really are kind of two stars here. One of them is the aforementioned Lucy. But Walton Goggins plays the ghoul. And you and I are both fans of Justified. This is sort of Boyd Crowder all over again. And one of the things that I would say about Walton Goggins is there aren't very many people that I can think of who can do that serial comic thing where he can be truly scary and worrisome and also very, very funny in kind of an endearing way. And this time he has to do it with no nose, which is even harder. But I think one of the reasons it works serial comically is a presence like him.
I mean, 100%. He's like, he's a cheat code. You know, anytime you put him in something, he's just like, I mean, yeah, and that wasn't even like a pun until you guys started laughing. I'm like, oh yeah, cheat code, video game. He's so good at like balancing that. And I think, partially because he's just like a great actor, but he's also like a very striking face. I mean, even more striking without a nose in this series. But he has a even in his serious performances, he has a wryness to him that that's present. So then when it's time for him to deliver a straight up joke, it's not feeling out of place. And I think he has like a physical presence, like the swagger that he walks around with is perfect for the ghoul character. And I think he is the part that carries me through the parts of the show that I'm not like the episodes. I'm like, I don't really care about any of this, but I want to see, I'll watch him do pretty much anything. You know what I mean? So, and I think like a lot of performances on the show are pretty good, but I mean, he's just one of the best people we have acting.
Particularly for this kind of thing too. So Carolyn, we should also talk a little bit about Ella Purnell. You and I both first noticed her in Yellow Jackets, but she is really getting a chance to strut a lot of different chops here in this situation. I mean, she in particular has to be able to carry off some of the comedy of it, but she also has to be the person who's really experiencing at a kind of Luke Skywalker level. I'm going to continue your tortured analogy to Star Wars. she has to kind of, she has to carry the off the stakes. She's trying to find her father. She's trying to navigate this world that she didn't even know existed above her head all of her life. And I don't know, I'm finding it a really good performance. And I, my sense is that you did too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought she was really a breakout star for me from Yellow Jackets. And, you know, she had a very complicated character in that who her face is really fascinating to me with her. She has these very like large doe eyes and she's very expressive with them, that there is a lot of like nonverbal performance that she gives here, too, where it has to be very nuanced as she is going through this journey. And, you know, the things that her character is having to face, where she's literally lived a sheltered life and then having to go out into this post-apocalyptic world where it's, you know, seems to be just commonplace to remove teeth and limbs and heads. She really is carrying it. And I think if she wasn't so successful at carrying this, I think to like Rich's point from earlier, where this is a hard show to get into. The first like couple hours of watching this is a little bit, it's one of those shows, like I always say, start the second episode in and you, but, and that's, you'll get hooked better, but she really helps take you feel that you have some sort of commitment to this, even from early on. I found when everything else was harder to watch, but all over the performances, the cameos in this of like character actors, for me, like Michael Rapaport, I know he's controversial, but him, his performance as the knight, just this like profanity ridden, angry, pathetic knight I think one of the first moments that really like hooked me into this. And then Matt Berry is Chop Chop. His voice work in that. I love his voice. I could listen to him, like, you know, read boring newspapers to me for hours. I love his voice. And I think his performance is Chop Chop. So it's just, she's the through line that carries this, but then there are all these amazing performances along the way, even if you don't fully see the actor.
Yeah, I'm also very happy to think that maybe we are living through the, I don't know if I can even say this word, Uggams Assance. But, you know, Rich, you know, we got a nice look at Leslie Uggams in American Fiction. Now she's back in this thing, too. And she's, it's just sort of great to see her. Where she been? But yeah, there's all kinds of weird cameos. And McKelty Williamson, we always like seeing him do anything. But Rich, I want to talk a little bit about the idea of this as a adaptation of a video game. Because there's challenges here. And I think one thing that I noticed is that in video games, things can sometimes happen more easily than they do in the outside world. And it's true here, too. Somebody gets his foot blown off and some robot comes over, just puts a new foot on him. You know? And then somebody else loses a finger and doesn't even really seem to be in excruciating pain, just like walking around, maybe going to find a new finger somewhere. And I wondered about that. I wondered whether the kind of facility that exists in video games is a problem there on the screen. But I know you have a lot of thoughts about all this, so fire away.
Yeah, so I think that I let go of it. I held on to that initially, right? Because that was the piece of the plot that felt like it never settled in for me for those first 2.5 hours, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where it just felt like you just kept ran from one spot to the other, found themselves in a corner, turned around and ran somewhere else. That there was this constant perpetual motion that came from a narrative that we didn't know because we weren't actually living it, right? So it had a sense of being over someone's shoulders while they played a video game that you weren't playing, that you really didn't understand the context to. initially. And to Caroline's point, what held you was this incredible self-professed naivete of the Ella Purnell Lucy character, right? You know, she embodied that for us. The gosh, I really don't know what's going on here, but here I am in this universe, kind of going through this, and so it was helpful to identify with her as our guide through this universe that neither of us really understood where we were going at any particular time. So they tried to navigate it. It was a little bit stilted for me, right? And part of the stilt is recently I've been working on a piece, and our editor was the editor from Run Lola Run. And so I've been watching that again to see how you keep a movie in that kind of perpetual motion. And you do it by immersing the viewer in the narrative. You know, you are the runner, not watching the runner. And so I think that disconnect where I felt in this movie like I was watching multiple runners all over the screen and couldn't necessarily tie all the pieces together was a big hiccup to this. It mirrored video game, but I don't think that it did it in a way that made it particularly cinematic, you know, or made it, you know, we didn't adapt particularly well to the screen initially. Now, a good deal later, when we started really understanding these characters and their motivations, you know, and we started seeing how these disparate stories that were started at the beginning started to intertwine and belong together into a cohesive universe, then I was all in it. You know, I was all in. I was part of the action. I had investment in all the characters, you know, including the ones that were, you know, menacing and squirrely.
I think one of the things they do well, too, to that point is there's a little bit of a buddy movie at times, like the kind of not great relationship buddy movie. I'm thinking a little bit of De Niro and Grodin in Midnight Run. You know, they don't really get along. One of them has a more idealistic view of things than the other one does. I think that helps us too, because we know that vibe. And we also know that Up From the Bunker vibe. Carolyn mentioned before the show, Blast From the Past, the Brendan Fraser movie. I was thinking a lot about the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, even the way that Parnell's character says things like okie doke and what the fudge. You know, Kimmy is, of course, Up From the Bunker a lot more recently. And so, Sean, we're running out of time here, but I want you to build on what Rich said, because my sense now is that the video game has a really kind of pervasive, understood reality that, I mean, for example, the music that I love so much, the music in this series is just enough to carry me along. I'll talk about it later, but I gather there's something called Galaxy News Radio or something in the video game that people are always listening to this kind of music on. And maybe you could just say a little bit about that idea, the world building that goes on in a video game, which there's a lot more space in which to build a world, and whether you see that up on the screen.
Yeah, I think when you're playing a game, like part of the world building is exploring the environment, right? So like, that's one of the things I was saying to Carolyn before the show is that, you know, like there's a lot of this, the lore that takes place in the show is in the game, but you could miss a lot of it because like you got to go into this building, and in the basement you find a file or you find an old radio clip, a radio playing a clip from 100 years ago, or you find a video playing and it's like it tells you the lore about the world around you, and like that might take hours to explore this whole building and you don't care because like what else you decided to play this video game. You want to explore this building. There might be something else in the building that you want to find. And also you come across this stuff and then it might lead you like, hey, if you look into this, you have to go to this other town and you'll find out more about this. Whereas in a show, it's like they're trying to serve all that, but also have a sort of like a narrative propulsion that doesn't always work because it's like, you can't give the full lore of the Brotherhood and also have them go, actually do the task that they have at hand. So it's kind of just trying to cram in a certain amount. I think they do as good a job as you can. But I think a part of the reason why I said, like, if it was just a comedy, there would be less of a concern of, like, having a narrative in that way. And it could just be, like, you come across that stuff the same way you do in a video game where it's, like, you learn about these people and it's, like, if you don't if you don't learn more about it, you're not going to be upset. Like when you watch like Atlanta, for example, like Atlanta is very rich sort of environment setting, but it's not like when you don't learn more about a character, you're not like upset. Like what was that guy's deal? It's kind of just like that happened and we're moving on. Cause this is like, it's not, the show is not about that. You know what I mean? Sometimes in especially in adaptations, you're like, you feel like, oh, I'm being deprived of like this experience because you kind of moved on from it. But you also included it just because you wanted people who are familiar with this to get a little bit like, we can't leave this out because the people who played the game are gonna need this. So it's, I think they do as good a job as you kind of can, but it's tricky.
All right. There's a lot more that we can talk about, but we're kind of out of time here. We're going to grab a quick break here. The series is called Fallout. I think we all kind of like it and think you might like it too. But don't write to us if you don't. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Conan O'Brien.
I just want to start a flame in your heart.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. Loneliness can be a significant health risk to people of all ages. Dr. Laura Saunders, a psychologist from Hartford HealthCare's Institute of Living, talks about social isolation and why we need to connect in person.
Loneliness actually is a pretty significant health risk for people that struggle with social isolation. It affects their blood pressure, it affects their immune system, it affects your willingness to get up and get out, and can cause some not just emotional issues, but health problems as well.
You're not alone. Dr. Saunders explains how important it is for us to look to others and get out of our comfort zone.
I like to talk about social isolation as not just that individual's problem, but it's a community problem or it's a family problem. We need to connect with others. We can take space at times as well, but we need to step out of our comfort zone and do things to connect with other people. It's life-saving.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Earth. A cradle for unimaginable beauty and staggering wonder. Incomprehensible, overwhelming. This planet mocks our feeble power to describe it. Yes, to truly appreciate the astounding grandeur of this planet, sometimes you must defile it. Behold the Defiler. His character is vile, base, and depraved. Once a proud talk show host, he has been driven by a changing ecosystem to a drier and harsher climate, the Weekly Podcast. Here, without the nourishment of his studio audience, this clown with dull, tiny eyes, the eyes of a crudely painted doll, is forced to feed on that meagerest of morsels, the random call-in fan. Unhinged by the feral scent of their mild enthusiasm, he scavenges in distant lands, uninvited, fueled by a bottomless hunger for recognition and the occasional selfie.
That is the opening to Conan O'Brien Must Go. There's actually another 40 seconds of that. It's pretty clearly Werner Herzog talking. I don't think he's ever credited anywhere, but it is the director, Werner Herzog. Conan O'Brien Must Go is a Max original travel series, if that's what it is. And it's a spinoff for the podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Let me just quickly say on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, one of the things they do, it's a podcast where he often interviews like really famous people. I mean, Tom Hanks, for example, was on the show. But like every few episodes, or maybe if they can't book a guest or something, they do a thing where anybody can kind of call in with a question. And the conceit here is that some of those people are from other countries. They enjoy the podcast. They're Conan O'Brien fans. And what he does is show up in their country and surprise them. They are supposedly not expecting him. I think that's probably even true based on some of the reactions. But so Rich Holland, get us started here. Rich Holland, Carolyn Payne, and Sean Murray are the news panel today. Rich, tell us how you're feeling about Conan O'Brien showing up in your country.
So I'm feeling that if I took a look at the homes in two episodes that he showed up in spontaneously, and I'm telling you, I don't buy that it was spontaneous, because he showed up in my house, it would not be nearly as picked up and tidy and well put together as the spontaneous visits were. And I think that that ultimately is the wonderful conceit of this series. It feels unscripted. It feels, it really feels like Conan just went, entered these spaces, and is winging it, right? And that there's an element of that that feels surprising, that feels unexpected, that feels awkward. It's got like some of the worst comedic timing, which makes it hilarious, right? I've not been a fan of Conan, right? I watched his TV show, and I could hang in with it for a little bit, and then I found him kind of, he's another one of those folks who is sort of self-proclaimed pervy, you know, yeah. But there's a piece where it just doesn't actually, it feels almost too true, yeah. Right?
I think some of the series, Rich, some of the power of the series, the comedic power of the series, is that he's leaning yeah. way into how creepy and uncomfortable making and odd looking he is. And he's just firing that as a cannon over and over again.
Exactly. And in this instance, it works. There's a piece about it from his TV show that for me didn't always work because it felt scripted, right? You know, you can't, but when you're, you know, whether it actually is as unscripted as it appears or isn't, it sure feels like they're winging it. And so it suddenly becomes this crazy nervous energy that in lack of, I don't know what to do right now, so I'm just going to be super creepy. And there's and there's something kind of entertaining about that choice, right? Which becomes less entertaining when you think that there are 20 people sitting around a room and making that decision, right? So I actually really enjoyed this. I was laughing out loud the entire time. It was crazy. It was unhinged. It would a bit would start and he'd just stop it like, yeah, no, that's not working, while it actually was working really well. And it was unpredictable and wacky. And, you know, I feel like I learned something about Ireland. I feel like I learned something about Norway. And yet I also feel a need to go and fact check everything yes. that I believe.
Yeah, I wouldn't proceed into any of those environments assuming that you had a handle on the vibe there. And, you know, I mean, Carolyn, I think this thing works also. Just as Rich was talking, I was thinking part of the vibe of this is, I mean, he shows up in places and he just kind of picks on people and he makes them feel uncomfortable and criticizes the condition of their apartments, even if they're not in very bad condition, to Rich's point. But it really comes off as a person who really likes people, pretending not to like people. And maybe that's one of the saving graces, one of the reasons we can hang out with him in these situations. But Carolyn, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, he's like making fun of people, but he's also very receptive and sets himself up to be made fun of back. And so everyone is in on the joke. And it's not like mean. There's not this sense of that he's really trying to be mean to these people. He's just having fun with them and they're having fun too. So that's like Rich said, I mean, you just kind of laugh the whole time with this. And Conan is he's such like an awkward ginger giant. And he is constantly playing up his own awkwardness with his like classic self-deprecating humor. I found this super fun to watch. Again, I didn't know that this was on. So thank you to the nose. I don't know what bubble I'm living in, but I'm a big Conan fan.
This is like you're like a whole different Carolyn Payne now, because usually we made you drive through the snow to watch an Avengers movie or something, and you're just, you know, permanently bitter about that. So I don't even recognize you. Who are you? Who are you?
I don't know. I know. I was mad that I liked both of these things, and I had to go on air today and say that I liked them.
You had to go on air and be a good sport. That is so off brand. All right.
Look what you made me do.
Yeah. Before Sean talks, just to sort of set Sean up to talk about this, we're going to play a little clip. In our time-honored fashion, this is a clip that's entirely a visual joke, and we're going to play it on the radio. But in the Norway segment, he announces early on that his luggage has been lost. I get the feeling that might be true. And so he goes into a store to buy some Norwegian clothes, and he comes out in this absurd outfit that include these sort of breeches and high socks and then a red vest and over a white shirt and then this bizarre black hat that's kind of halfway between a top hat and a derby. And he is standing there. He couldn't look more ridiculous. He runs into, I guess, maybe a typical citizen from Bergen, Norway. The person's name is Dagfinn, which turns out to be important as well. Here's B1 Cat.
Quick question. I just picked this up. Yeah. Is this how people dress in Norway?
No.
One no is fine. Why'd you do three no's?
Because it's more ridiculous.
This is ridiculous?
Yeah.
They sold me this. They said that people wear this in Norway.
That's not true.
Nobody wears this.
No.
You're saying I look foolish right now?
Yes.
Dagfinn, if I can call you Dagfinn, you don't sugarcoat it, do you? You tell it just as it is.
Yes.
So I look like a fool?
Yes. Today.
You think the women would like this outfit?
No. Not today.
Do you think a guy might like this outfit?
No.
No one would like this outfit?
Yes, that's correct.
So far, all you've done is shoot me down.
Yes.
You haven't said one nice thing to me since I spoke to you.
No.
So you're just being very honest with me that I look stupid.
Yes, today.
I look like a fool.
Yes, today.
Like an idiot.
Yeah, today.
Do you think I should have waited for my luggage to come back from the airport rather than buy this?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So everything I've done is wrong?
Yes.
And then he says, you know, Dagfinn, ass jerky don't make itself. No, he didn't say that. But so, Sean, just take it away. Go wherever you want with it.
Well, that's a perfect example of how, he even says it himself. He's like, so I look like a fool. Like, Conan is, I think, the best in the world at being the butt of a joke. Like, he's needy enough to need a laugh, but he's not so needy that he needs to be the person who's like, superior in the joke. Like, he'll be the fool so much. But my favorite part about that clip specifically is how Dogfin keeps saying yes today, as if like his grandfather is there, say, like who used to dress like that, and he's like you look fine, you look idiotic today, but like 80 years ago when my grandfather was here, you would have looked fine or whatever. Like, it's so funny. He just keeps saying like, you don't look foolish, you just look foolish today. But I love how Conan has this ability to like extend a joke, right? Where it's like he gotten, you know, basically everything he could, like the crux of the joke he was making was accomplished about 5 seconds into that interaction. But he got so many more laughs out of it by just asking him more and more questions and forcing Dogfinn to just sort of like constantly reiterate how stupid he looks. And I think one of the things I love about the show is that like that joke is about how in one instance about like how he thinks of a person from Norway would dress, but he obviously he's fully aware that no one dresses like that today. But I think Conan dances this line of like mockery and like, you know, like good fun amusement so well, because I think because he's so he always makes himself like look like just like an ignorant American who doesn't know about this culture more than an American who thinks he's better than this culture. You know what I mean? He's always like, one of my favorite interactions is even like later in that same episode where he's just wearing a regular jacket and he comes up across a guy who's he asks him how he looks in the jacket and the guy insults him, and Conan basically gives him the jacket. He said, you could just sell this to someone because it's not working for me. And it's like, it's just like, even in like, he's just dressing normally, he finds a way to make himself like the butt of a joke. He's just so good. Like, Conan's like one of my guys. He always has been. But like Conan in the Wild, which is I guess another way name the show could have been called, is the best, because he can, no matter what culture he's in, no matter what room he's in, he can make anybody laugh because he keys in on not trying to like meet them at their level. He brings them to his level, which is, I am a buffoon and I don't care what level, how low I have to stoop to get that laugh, I'll get the laugh.
Yeah, to Rich's earlier point, I think one of the reasons that his talk show didn't work for a lot of people, or for some people, or people didn't like it as much as they might like other things, is I don't really want to see him interview, you know, Emilia Clarke or something. I don't think he's going to ask her any interesting questions.
And I think he doesn't want to either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we're running out of time here, but I want to ask quickly, I should say that two of the panelists here were on our Curb Your Enthusiasm show, and which is kind of relevant here. Rich, you were not, but there is a cringe quality to what's happening here, Rich, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't know if you didn't see the Argentina episode, but in that particular one, he gets introduced to the idea that Argentines kiss one another, even if they don't know one another, when they, you know, and he just takes it so far that I really started to get kind of uncomfortable, even though he was doing it for Comic King 10. But there's, I think, Rich, one of the things he's really good at is inhabiting both of those spaces, being intentionally creepy, but also seeming just creepy enough so that the joke part of it is always in danger of slipping away.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, as Sean was talking, I was reminding myself of this scene where he's in Ireland. And he's tasting in some sort of butchery or something. And he was tasting these blood sausages, right? And they went through the whole process of how blood sausage is made. And it included like vats of pig blood being dumped in this thing. It was just a gruesome looking thing for a post-vegetarian, right?
Yeah. And they took, by the way, all that pig blood. They gave it to the people making Fallout and it got used again on that. So anyway, continue.
And there is that thread. So he's tasting this thing. My expectation was from how it was set up with the edits that he was going to be gagging and finding the whole thing to be repulsive. But instead, he just was in such delight that he did an interpretive dance that included like writhing on the floor, his belly exposed. and you keep thinking that the thing is going to end, but it doesn't. He just keeps squirming and squirming and squirming in this super creepy, awkward delight, particularly for an incredibly tall person.
Right.
And then it just ends and some guy comes along, mops the floor, and that's the end of that scene.
that's called commitment, I think, in comedy.
It's complete commitment.
Yeah.
It's complete commitment. It's improv on steroids.
All right. I want to talk more about this, but we really are getting pretty close to the time we have to go. So you guys will have plenty of time for your endorsements. So let's take a little break. Yeah, it's called Conan O'Brien Must Go. Not to be confused with the other Conan O'Brien travel series, which is called something else and is also available on Max. But that's not the one we're talking about. And today's technical producer is Kat Pastor. The producer of today's episode is Jonathan McPants. Our panelists today on The Nose are Rich Holland, Sean Murray, Carolyn Payne. They're going to make some recommendations to you right now. Carolyn, why don't you get us started?
My recommendation is for Palm Royale on Apple TV. I love it. You have everything that you need. You have Kristen Wiig, you have Carol Burnett, Allison Janney, Leslie Bibb, who is finally, I think, getting the kind of role that she really deserves. It's fun. It's campy. And Ricky Martin, you can't leave him out in this. It's fun. It's campy. The 60s fashion is great. It's really, this is the kind of show that I think is like made for me. And it's like not surprising that I would like it. But it is, I think it's worth the watch. And it's, I think in about its sixth episode or so this week. So
yeah, I've watched about half an episode so far. And the aesthetic is really interesting. I'm not sure how far I'm going to go with this, but we'll see. But yes. So, say the name of the series again.
Palm Royale.
Yes.
Colin, you really got to get in deeper with it. If for anything else other than Carol Burnett,
yes.
Her performance.
So far, I've just seen her lying in a bed and having things stolen from her. So
yeah, she does a lot of that.
I'm sure she'll do so much more. All right. So Sean Murray, what are you going to recommend to us?
Normally, I come in here, Colin, and I recommend a book to you guys. But what I'm going to do this week is recommend a place where books are sold, which is hosting a show called Read the Room, hosted by your very own Sean Murray, Saturday, April 27th, which is tomorrow at 8 p.m. It's a comedy show hosted by me at a bookstore. It's a very book-centric show. It's going to be a blast. I have some great comics on there. And there's still tickets available. If you want to get tickets, you can go to my Instagram, LowbrowSean. And my bio, there's a ticket link in there. Also, Read the Room Comedy on Instagram has a ticket link as well. And it'll be great. And if you missed this one, there's another one in June. June 29th, I believe. So, yeah, that's what I'm endorsing. I'm plugging myself for once, and it'll never happen again.
Okay, say the venue again and the date and time.
It is Possible Futures Bookstore in New Haven, 318 Edgewood Avenue. And it's April 27th, 8 p.m. That's tomorrow, 8 p.m.
All right.
Be there and be square.
Okay. Yes, a chance to see Sean Murray. Rich Holland, what are you going to recommend?
So, I mentioned it earlier, and I'm going to recommend it, and folks should see this movie if they haven't yet. And if you have, see it again, because I loved it the fifth time. Run, Lola, Run. It was released, the late 90s.
Yeah, we figured out released in 98, but not in this country until 99. So you're on the 25th anniversary. It's very hip.
Oh, am I really? Oh, that's cool. That's cool. It's a really wacky story of like this massive amount of money that got left on a train on a subway in Berlin and by this like criminal, this petty criminal who then like talks his girlfriend into trying to figure out how to get it back in 20 minutes, right? So this entire movie is about this woman running all over Berlin trying to figure out who she could either borrow it from or where she could find it, or, you know, this crazy story of how to make it happen with some of the most beautiful, intense editing that set the standard for, in my opinion, for how we could see things happen so quickly in front of our eyes in the cinema right now. It broke the code for this intensely fast edit that doesn't lose the narrative, and it's worth a view. Run, Lola, Run.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it since it came out, so it would be very interesting to watch it now. I'm going to recommend, so the music in Fallout is amazing, and it's music, I tend to know a lot of old music, and a lot of this surprised me. There were things I had to look up afterwards. So I want to recommend a couple of things that fall into the category of the nostalgia that you see there. And it's also, I discovered today that there is a whole world within the video game of this kind of music. There's even more of it that gets used. A couple of things that jumped out. The singer Betty Hutton, who is a kind of semi-forgotten singer. She was also a actress of the stage and screen. There's a couple of Betty Hutton songs. One of them is called He's a Demon, He's a Devil, He's a Doll. It's definitely in the video game. I don't know if they use it in the series or not. And there's another one called It's a Man. Both of those are really fun to listen to. But I would just sort of suggest, you know, if you can find, probably on whatever streaming service you have, you can find some playlists that are inspired probably by the video game Fallout. You would just type in Fallout 4 and see if you get any playlists back. And then explore those playlists. Another kind of band leader of the time, Bob Crosby, brother of Bing, but did some very interesting stuff in his own right, and also performed something called the Clark Randall Orchestra, which featured the singer Clark Randall, who was really named Frank Tennille and was Tony Tennille's father. There's a weird little thing for you. But I think we're really kind of in a moment of nostalgia, partly because 2024 just sucks so bad. I saw a Reddit thread today that said 2024 is the era of literally anything but today. And so I'll just close with saying, a day after Fallout was released on Amazon Prime, Andrew Bird, a contemporary artist, released two songs, covers of I Fall in Love Too Easily and I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face. And these are really, really good covers. It's not like Rod Stewart trying to put out an album of jazz standards or something, which is just a nightmare. But Bird is really, really legitimate. He takes the whole thing very, very seriously. He also plays really good jazz violin on at least one of the songs, too. So I don't know. I'm really interested in the role nostalgia is playing right now. Don't be surprised if we do a whole episode about it very soon. But meanwhile, time to say thank you to Rich Holland, Sean Murray, Carolyn Payne. They are the Nose. We have to go. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Let me tell you, baby, I'll meet you down on a silo across from St. Francis, past the conservatory,
up the street from the seminary. You know, it's a very, very, very cool place to hang out. Yeah. It's cozy, like a Cracker Barrel. Yeah, we'll be laughing, talking, joking, talking about this and talking about that. And talk about everything as a matter of fact. Oh, yeah. Talk about Torrington, Vernon, Danbury, Waterbury, Oliveberry, Woodbury, hitting on New Britain, Vernon, I already said that one, Avon, Farmington, yeah, 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 yeah.